Sober on Purpose is the podcast that takes you beyond clean to fulfilling your dreams. Other programs get you sober. We ask, what's next? Come thrive with us.
Welcome back, Sober on Purpose family. This is Tanya Joya, and I have the great privilege of welcoming Jim White. He works with parents and children, a lot of teens. A lot of you have been asking for, how do I explain this to the kids? What do we talk about in the family? And there's a journey, there's a process. So Jim White is an author, a coach, a founder of the Family Enrichment Academy. He's been married for 40 years. Clocking in at 20 next month, so I hope to get there. 6 kids of his own, 13 grandkids. We were just talking about that it's back to school season right now. And his second book, How to Be the Parent Your Teenager Needs You to Be, is one of the things we're going to delve into. And you can find that on Amazon. So welcome, Jim.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be here. Looking forward to it.
Oh, thanks. So one of the things that really strikes the women that I work with is, okay, I've got kids, my house is being disrupted with whatever addiction style behavior is going on. What would you suggest they start doing in their parenting model with the kids when there is upheaval? Sometimes it doesn't always mean they're leaving or moving out of the house, but there's a lot of tension, a lot of stress. Right. So how would you begin to talk to a parent about that?
Well, I'd start two places. First of all, with the parent themselves, it's easy for them to take on a more fearful mindset and then respond out of that fear when they engage with a child. I'm not talking about when they're engaging with the other adult that's maybe in the home, but it's, you know, even when they engage with the child, if they come from that fearful place, it tends to not go as well. And so the first place would just be to start with themselves and really try to stay grounded in love. That's the, to me, I like to describe, we have these two competing mindsets within all of us. And one of them is love-based and one of them is fear-based. And the more you can stay grounded in your love-based mindset, the more effective you're going to be in building relationships with the child, for example, and connecting with them and really just being there for them in a supportive role. So I think that's the first place I would point to, is just kind of be aware of where you are and be very intentional about, oh, wait a minute, I'm, you know, maybe a little disappointed. It may not be, and it's not always frustration and anger. Sometimes it's being disappointed or a little apathy sometimes can start. If you feel like you don't know what to do, or hopelessness, those are all signals that you're coming from more of a fearful place. And then it's from an awareness standpoint, just, I must be a little fearful. Then try to shift your perspective. And actually I like to have people start to think in terms of, I use these three questions that I think are really powerful with people. One is, if you feel this way, the first question is, you know, who do I need to forgive, or how can I look at this from a compassionate perspective? So that's the first thing, to try to be forgiving and compassionate. The next piece is, okay, what am I grateful for? Try to introduce some gratitude into your perspective. And then the last piece is the action-oriented component, which is, how can I make a difference right now? And so those three questions, it's simple, but it's a good way to kind of shift from that fearful mindset to being more love-based, and then coming out of it with, okay, what can I do? You know, what action can I take? So that would be one place to start. The second thing is to really focus on building connection with the child. Make that a primary goal or a primary intention. And the reason that's so critical is it has the child then feel safe. And it provides stability for that child. And that's what they're feeling, disrupted. If the house is disrupted, you know, they're feeling that. And so, and it becomes, you know, they feel like, oh, you know, who I need to be seen for. I like to say, we like to be seen for who we are and loved unconditionally. Mm-hmm. And if you can communicate that through building connection, that just goes a long way to having that child be more grounded and feel safe, even though the home itself, there may be some disruption happening within it. So connection would be the next piece to really focus on, I think.
Oh, you've landed on one of my big words. So Gabor Mate he's not new to the field, but his work is becoming more and more known in the addiction area. And he says, sobriety is not the opposite of addiction. It's connectedness. That's what heals people, is being connected and being seen and being heard and feeling loved and feeling safe. In this area, I have some moms who come to me and say, well, we haven't talked about it in front of the kids, and I don't think they know. Now, with your experience, I know what I would say, but with your experience, what does that child know when the house is really disrupted?
You know, they probably know more than you think they might know. I think kids are more aware than we maybe give them credit for being. They certainly feel things. So if there's tension within the home, they may feel it. They may not be able to express it, put it into words, or really understand what it is. But it creates some difficulty or some angst for them if there's tension in the home. So I think they're going to pick up on, it's kind of like that, those nonverbal things. You know, the climate or the culture within the home has some impact for them. And so I would think, you know, they are going to feel that, and they may have more awareness, like say, depending on how old they are. You know, mm-hmm. a 16, 17, 18 year old is probably going to be pretty aware if there's issues going on. Now you're, you know, 10, 11, 12 year old may not be as attuned to those. So some of it depends on their age. And because, you know, you think about the older ones, that the older teenagers, they start to see stuff within their peer group. Mm-hmm. As well. And so they start to recognize signs, and they're much more aware. So I just think you don't want to underestimate what they know or what they don't know. It doesn't mean you have to bring it up, but it's just be aware that they probably are picking up on something within the home.
And when there is disruption in the home, what are some cues that your kids are feeling unsafe, maybe not sure about what's happening? What are some cues that you can pick up on, maybe at school or in life? What happens, especially with the little ones and then teenage? It seems to be that middle section is not as you can really see it, I think, in the teenagers and the little ones. The middle section seems to be really focused on themselves right about that time. But what are cues that you would be seeing? You may need to spend some more time with that child.
Yeah, I think any kind of unwanted, when parents, I like to talk about unwanted behavior. You know, if they have angry outbursts, if they have a change in behavior as far as school, for example, where they used to get good grades and now they just don't seem to care. You know, any of those changes in behavior that kind of go in a negative way are a sign that the child may be struggling. And actually, one of the things I like to share with parents is any bad or unwanted behavior by the child is really just a call to connect. They're reaching out, they're calling, or you could say a call for love. And so we need to see it that way. And it's interesting, a lot of times it's not necessarily like a straight line connection between the dots. And what I mean by that is, they say they're overwhelmed and stressed out at school, and they come home and they pick a fight with their sister over something. And you think, well, why are they fighting with them? Well, it's the overwhelm over here at school. And it just happens to be that it comes out of them, you know, that it has to come out in some way. And it happens to come out with a fight with a sibling, for example. Whether it's withdrawn, when they start to withdraw, if there's angry outburst, if they, they have any, you know, even it could be like stomach, you know, you talk about anxiety is what comes up. So, and it can even be physical things, you know, if they're not sleeping well, or they have stomach aches or headaches, all of those are potential signals that they're just under a lot of stress. Think of it that way. You know, they're under stress, and they may not really understand where it's coming from, but the first step I would put out there is then it's a call to connect. It's a call to, they want to feel safe again. And how you do that, you sort of wrap your arms around them, both literally and, you know, figuratively. You wrap your arms around them and provide that safe place, and that'll help them to regain composure and get themselves back grounded.
Can you give us some examples of connection? With the little ones, it's easier. You pick them up, you hold them, you do that. But as you're getting into those tweens and teens, what can you do? You know, the stress is happening, you're dealing with your own stuff. What would be some examples of connection?
So I'll put it in two buckets at first. First of all, if there's overwhelm, if the child's overwhelmed, that's different than just everyday engagements that you might have, where the things might be a little bit more calm, if you will. So if we start with the calm, just sort of everyday engagements, I like to talk about, you know, being playful. You know, you try to incorporate a little playfulness. It's a great way to build connection. And if you've got a 12, 13, 14 year old, if it's a boy, you know, you go out and you play basketball in the driveway. If it's a girl, maybe you get out a board game. One example I love to share with people, I mentioned my youngest daughter is actually a senior in college this year. But when she was in high school, my wife and her loved show tunes, you know, Broadway plays. And I'd be outside and they'd have the you know, Pandora cranked up and they're playing Hamilton or Les Mis or something. And they're in there singing and dancing. I mean, they're just, but they're having fun. That's the point, is it's playful. It's having fun. So find ways to be playful. I talk about being curious. You know, curiosity is a great way to build connection and be genuinely curious and ask them, what's it like to be 12 years old and go to school? And the careful thing there is you got to be careful you don't start passing judgment and trying to change things. You're just listening. You're just trying to connect at that point. Being compassionate. We talked about that, you know, in having some compassion with them, being present. I mean, it seems obvious, but sometimes we can get distracted by our phones and computers. You know, you work from home and you're physically in the house, but you aren't really present with them. And especially with a teenager, it's funny. I had a mom just the other day come to me. She says, I don't understand. My daughter at 11:30 at night, she just starts talking and she won't stop talking. Well, The teenager, they like to talk at night. That's when their guard's down. They're a little bit more vulnerable at night and they will talk to you. And in that moment, you got to be present. Even though you want to go to bed, it's time to drop what whatever's in front of you and be there with them, because it's a great time to connect if you can, you know, be there with them. So those are all examples in sort of the, you know, everyday interactions that you might have. You know, when they're experiencing that overwhelm, it's just, I think there's just being present with them and being compassionate and being forgiving are the kind of the key attributes that you want. You want to make them feel safe. And you want to make them feel seen so that it helps them to regain their composure. And you don't work on fixing the issues or trying to solve problems at that point. It's just a matter of providing that safe place for them to regain composure. So it's just, and literally putting your arms around them and giving them a hug, you know, and telling them that you love them can have a huge impact for them.
That's awesome. We did hit a stage where the silliness maintained, but as they were shifting and bodies were shifting, and I have two boys,
right.
So I'm the odd man out, and they're like, well, we know you as mom, but now we're beginning to see that you're kind of like these other girls that are beginning to shift and change. So we came up with, E.T. is such an old movie now, but they would let me do this and they'd poke their finger out and that was the hug for right there.
Right.
And it became so silly. You know, they'd kind of shuffle in and they'd be like, okay, let's do this. So it was hard for me. I mean, we've shifted again that they will let me hug them. But during some of that change period, as they're all over 6 foot now, it was hard to back off and say, okay, they're not willing for that heavy physical touch right now, and to back off and say that's okay and not shame them about it and not require it. You know, it's like the aunt that always wants to kiss on the lips and you're like, not sure I want to do that. That shift to back up and be okay with that was hard, but it sure did help.
Yeah.
In that I'm saying, okay, I know you're shifting and changing and it's okay for you not to be my little boy anymore.
Right.
Now you're my big man.
I would use the word, it's being compassionate. You're being, or empathetic maybe is another way to say that. You're being aware of what they're experiencing. And I think you point to something that all parents need to know. There is going to be that period as they grow into their bodies where they may become uncomfortable, whether it's a daughter or a son, but that will pass. I think that's the point in this, is just be aware that it will pass. And your role during that time is just to continue to look for ways to build connection, you know, that may not include the hug every day or the kiss in the morning, that sort of thing, but you still can work and continue to build and develop connection. And as you do that, it just will circle back to you later on as they get older.
Let's talk a little more in depth of, so maybe the situation has gotten bad enough that one parent needs to leave the home. The parents even don't know what's going to happen. And you've got kids who are like, where is everybody? What's going on? How is this happening? Again, can you start with the littles and move all the way into the teenager of how you would maintain that connection, offer support and safety? What would you do with that?
Yeah. I would focus a lot on connection and build, because that'll give you insight as to where they are. The stronger the connection, you'll have some sense of what they're, and I will say that with that too, they will be more willing to share questions or concerns with you, the stronger that connection is. It just opens up the lines of communication. So that's why it's so important to try to maintain that. But when, you know, assuming that that's there, it's, I think being vulnerable is okay in some ways, you know, and it allows them to see, you sort of model vulnerability, and that allows them to be vulnerable too. And if they, you know, it's okay for them to say they're scared or they're confused, you know, if they just, again, it's about seeing them for who they are. And if they feel seen, one thing would be to acknowledge and validate, you know, what's it. I have this thing where I talk about don't dismiss feelings. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're going to have feelings and emotions. So as the parent, try not to dismiss them, just acknowledge and validate them. And I'd like to point to, sometimes we respond in a way that we feel like we're being supportive, but it really is dismissing. We'll say to them, you know, it's okay, you don't need to feel that way, which sounds like you're trying to encourage them, but at the same time, you're really dismissing the feeling when you do that. And we just need to be aware of that and just, you know, use acknowledge and validation as a way to, you know, build connection and let them feel seen, let them feel heard. And I think that whether they're 5 years old or 15 years old, that's just super powerful when they're confused, because sometimes just saying it helps to relieve some of that angst or anxiety that might be connected to it, you know, just getting it out and knowing that somebody heard them and acknowledged that, you know, that is there for them. And I don't know that the parent always has to have an answer. I think sometimes we need to give ourselves a little grace and know that we don't always have to have the answer. And that's an example of being vulnerable. You can say, you know, I don't really know exactly, you know, what's going to happen. You know, and I think that's, but it will be okay together. It's, you know, then you circle back to, you know, but I love you unconditionally. I'm here. You know, you can feel safe. We'll get through this together, kind of a thing. Interesting little twist to this. I know sometimes it feels, how do I want to say this? You ever heard the idea of sometimes we look at circumstances as happening to us?
Yeah.
And I encourage parents to think in terms of this is happening for you.
Absolutely.
In this situation or circumstance, no matter how difficult and challenging it is, when you approach it from an empowerment standpoint and more from a love-based perspective, it presents an opportunity for your growth and your child's growth along their journey. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, a lot of times I talk to parents about helping the child become resilient. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, you can't become resilient unless you go through a little bit of a struggle.
Right.
Right. And you have to go through it in order to get it. And so if you look at this situation, whatever your circumstance is okay, how can we use this to help develop resiliency? And again, you need to do it in appropriate levels, depending on how old they are. But it's really, in some ways, it may be a gift. And if you look at it that way, it shows up different, then you're going to respond differently. And it's not just what you say, it's how you say it. Mm-hmm. Comes out differently. And it makes the child feel safe again, because mm-hmm. you feel safe and you know that this is part of the journey. So I don't know if I got all the way to your answer. I went a little bit on a tangent, maybe.
So. I think you really did. It's the modeling piece. And that's something that I bring into the Dancing with Joy program that I put together, is this is happening for you, not to you. You right. are responsible to them, not for them, in the sense of you're not God. You're not the savior. They have a path that they are going to go on. So you are responsible to them right. to guide and to cherish and to love and to do things that keep everybody safe, depending on the age of it. But they will have their own path. And how can you, as you've said a couple times, maintain that connection? Because that's really yeah. what it's about.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess you're here because you have a loved one who is either in full-blown addiction or is looking for recovery. You're not here just to talk about chickens, which we could talk about chickens, but you're not here for that. You're here because you're at possibly where I was 12 years ago. You're surfing the internet looking for hope, looking for help, looking for a way to maintain this beloved family, this beloved marriage, this lovely child. You are looking for something. Well, stop looking. At Tanya Joya Coaching, we realize that the family is not hopeless, is not helpless, and is not powerless to help the addicted loved one get well. We fully realize that you have been doing everything for everybody and you're exhausted, even if you don't have 400 chickens. We completely understand that while this is no laughing matter, you need a little levity, you need a little joy, you need a little hope in your life. So look no further. We have an Arise from Addiction Facebook group, or if you want to talk to me immediately and say, look, I just need help. Where I was 12 years ago, surfing the internet at 3 and 4 in the morning going, I just need somebody who can tell me a story of hope. I want you to join the Rise Above Addiction Facebook group. And then I want you to reach out to hello@tanyajoya.com. It's all in the notes below. You can do this. You can make extraordinary changes. But what I understand is you're waiting. You're waiting for them to fix themselves when you can be part of the solution. So stop waiting. Become the cherished wife, not the nagging wife. Make sure that you check into our Facebook group at Arise from Addiction on Facebook. We'll look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah.
So as we head towards close, how to be the parent your teenager really needs. This really hits home for me because for a while, when my first one was coming a teenager, I was a teenager right along with him. I had some growing up to do. So what, if you gave us kind of an encapsulated, what do parents really need to take on to be a parent instead of get down there in the trenches with their teenager?
Yeah. The fundamental message that I try to send to everybody, I alluded to it earlier, is the idea of being more love-based. And the more love-based you can be, things will work out. It's almost like, think of it like a continuum. And in each and every moment, it's not just while we're sitting here talking, and it's easy when you're, you know, sitting in an unchallenging situation and you're just having a little conversation, but it's in the heat of the moment, you know, when life's putting the squeeze on you, can you maintain that love-based perspective? And if you think about, you know, the day and every moment that's in the day, you know, how many times, you know, are you 50-50? Are you 50% fear-based, 50% love-based? Well, if tomorrow you can be 52% love-based and 48, that's a step in the right direction. And that's the journey that we're all on, is how do I try to move forward and be more love-based, even if it's 1% better? You probably heard that idea, you know, get 1% better each day. And what's going to happen is a circumstance will pop up that pushes your button, right? And just by habit, you're going to fall back into that fearful mindset. But it's about that ongoing development. And that's in the title of the book, I talk about how you can be. It's being love-based as much as possible. That's really how you serve your child and you serve yourself. It's interesting. I always encourage parents to think about parenting. It's a personal development program for them.
Boy, right? Is it.
Right. It's a chance for you to grow and learn and develop and have a bigger, better life, because you're going to learn, and my assertion is, as you learn to be more love-based, your life gets better too. It's not just your parenting, but you know, your work life, your professional life, your your relationship and your marriage, all that stuff can get better. I mean, you think about building connection, that applies everywhere that mm-hmm. you go, which is the other fundamental that I always talk to parents about, is the idea of being being a source of empowerment and empowering the child to be their best. And again, that's a skill set that applies everywhere. I mean, think about it with a spouse. I mean, I view part of my role is to empower my wife to be her absolute best. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, and it brings joy to me. It's fulfilling to me to be able to do that, right? Just like it is with my child. And those same kinds of, you know, like say out in a professional life, that can be helpful too. So that's how parenting is a personal development program, because you get a chance to work on all these skills and it becomes more part of who you are when you go out and engage every day.
It's awesome. And I've had the pleasure of listening to some of your podcasts. Empowerment isn't what you think sometimes. So talk to us a little bit about empowerment, and it isn't okay, you can have everything you want. What really builds that empowerment strength?
Yeah, it's just taking a different mindset. And what I find happens a lot with parents is there's this battle over control. If you think about the little, you know, 1-2-year-old, the parent is in charge, right? They control everything, when they eat, what clothes they wear, you know, when they sleep. But there should be this natural transition over time to where more and more control is handed over to the child. And a lot of times parents will say, well, then what do I do? Well, the alternative is you become more of an empowerment coach. So what you're doing is you're there in support of the child having their own accomplishments. An example, you know, your 12-year-old has a bad grade on a test. Mm-hmm. If you're in a control mode, you go in, you say, okay, here's what we're doing. We're going to study from 3 to 5 every night. Here's the problems you're going to do. I'm checking the work. You know, you're in charge. The empowerment mindset is, okay, how could you come up with a plan to study better next time? You let them come up with the plan. Mm-hmm. What study habits work best for you? What could get in your way and distract you? You start asking these questions part of what you're doing is you're helping them to become more thoughtful and you're teaching them how to solve their own problems, and you're teaching them to be resourceful. And it's just interesting, as you do that, the child becomes more self-confident. They're, mm-hmm. you know, one of the big fears is the fear of not being good enough. You know, that you hear that I'm not pretty enough, not smart, you know, all that stuff that kids will say. Well, the more accomplishment they have, the more success they have, that helps to offset that fear. But they only have that if you let them go through and do things on their own in some way with your support. And so it's just a different mindset. You know, you look at it again as an opportunity to guide them rather than do it for them. And you guide them with questions to have them think through the answers. Now, here's an interesting challenge. So let's use the homework example. They come up with a plan to study for the next week. You as the parent look at it and you say, what? This is never going to work, right? You kind of think that.
Right.
But you have to reserve that judgment and let them try to execute on their plan. And if they do come out the other end and it doesn't work real well, then you're back into a empowerment. You say, well, what went wrong? What could you do different next time? Mm-hmm. What did you not think of that you would have helped? It's just a chance to continue to move them down that path. Mm-hmm. And so that's how empowerment's a little bit different than controlling everything. And there needs to be a little bit of balance, because sometimes the parent will control what's going on, but I think we can turn over more and more. And what happens is, if you are always doing it for the child, they start to depend on you mm-hmm. to do it for them. Mm-hmm. They say, I don't have to worry about it. Mom or dad will do it. Right.
Yes.
And so, but if you hand it over to them, they start to experience some pride too, you know, a sense of accomplishment. And here's the last thing I'll say. The underlying message when you control everything is that you don't believe they're capable of doing it on their own.
That was a hard one to learn, because I was like, okay, we're going to take care of us. We'll plan it like this and we'll make this happen. Da, 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 da. And as they began to move into the teenage years, the message I got was let go.
Yeah.
And I really struggled. My husband's a little better at this than I am. I really struggled with that. But as we began to let go, we began to see that confidence grow.
Yeah. It's because, like I said, the underlying, even though you're helping and what happens too, the parent sees a difficult situation and the child may experience a little pain or suffering, mm-hmm. like we were talking mm-hmm. about, mm-hmm. and that kills us. You know, we want to go in and help. Mm-hmm. But again, that underlying message is you don't believe in them. You don't believe they're capable. Whereas mm-hmm. if I approach it from the empowerment standpoint and I say, you got this, you can handle yeah. it. That message is you got it, right? I believe in you as a parent. I believe in you. And it's just, it's subtle, but it's so powerful at the same time, if you can do that.
Well, and it's really gratifying. We were having a really hard time with chores with my oldest son. And we finally figured out that he liked to shop. And so if we gave him a grocery list, he went and shopped and he did a good job doing it. And he didn't buy all the extra things that we would be like, oh, well, we need this and we need that and blow the budget. So he did a really good job doing that. He was able to go to his friends. They're having some kind of life skills class somewhere, sophomore, junior year. And he said, most of my friends are afraid to go to the grocery store and afraid to shop and afraid to do this. That yeah. turned into he's bought and sold between 16 and 18. He's bought and sold 3 trucks all on his own. He talks to him. He connects with him. He pays the bill. He manages all of that. And I'm right. thinking, if I hadn't let go of, you can't go to the grocery store. I have to do that. You're cleaning the bathroom. You're doing this. You're doing that. If I hadn't looked for this outside scope and been confident in him doing that, we wouldn't have had the next life processes going in right. there. But right. I tell you what, coming from a very controlling background of who I am, that was really hard. And if your household is disruptive, that is still really hard. But think about how good he feels about himself when he came home to me and he said, Mom, most of those kids would be afraid to go do the grocery shopping. They wouldn't know how to do it. I can do that. And I can right. even price shop.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, you can. Because yeah. some of that was out of necessity. There wasn't enough parent energy to go around at that point, and he needed to learn some things.
Right, so. Right. It's amazing.
Yeah, I really hear you when you're saying, you know, empower them, coach them through it, even if it's scary sometimes.
Right. Yeah.
Let them do it.
Yeah. Let them grow and learn and develop. And it's just amazing. And one, I'll just share this thought too, that the idea, especially like around schoolwork, for example, if you control the situation, they may get a better grade on that next test. But my question is, what's 20 years from now, what's going to serve them more? An A that they got on that next test, or their being able to be resilient and resourceful?
Right.
You Absolutely. Know, that's what's the long-term goal. That's going to provide them more and serve them more out into the future. And so we got to take advantage of those opportunities when they present themselves.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, I can't thank you enough. Your wisdom is so deep and so broad. I really enjoyed the podcast. Tell the audience where they can find you, how they can find your podcast, all your resources.
Absolutely. So it's familyenrichmentacademy.com. So you can go there. And actually, I do have a free resource that if it's okay, I might share as well. Yes, I've got, it's 10 things you need to stop doing as a parent. And then what you can do instead. Actually, we mentioned one. I mentioned stop dismissing feelings. So that's mm-hmm. one of that's, I'll give you a free one there. That one's on the list. So it's that kind of stuff. And then what do you do instead? You know, it's the alternative. So, and that's right on the homepage on the website. So again, you can go to familyenrichmentacademy.com and find and the blog there. And then I also have a YouTube channel as well under the same name. And I try to post content on a regular basis. So love to be able to serve and help people as they, you know, move along their journey. That's the goal.
You do coach parents with Are you just doing parents with teenagers, or do you do parents with children?
Just parenting in general. So really, I'll work with anybody that has needs some help. So yeah, so I do one-on-one coaching. I think I mentioned earlier, well, it was before we started, you know, I do workshops and speaking and that sort of work as well. So it's just, you know, the Family Enrichment Academy is a vehicle to deliver content. That's the goal.
Awesome. Awesome. Because I can tell you from my own journey, I reached out to a lot of people and said, this is crazy. Why is this happening? You know, yeah. And kids wouldn't even know the sign that I'm doing because they talk to their phone like this. Right?
Exactly.
But Jim, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. I know this will help a lot of folks in the audience. And he has several free resources on there about what to do and what not to do. So please engage with the Family Enrichment Academy.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You, beloved listener, are creative, resourceful, and whole. Do you want to add more purpose to your sober journey? Do you want to make room for the new and make your dreams a reality? Apply today for a dream session. Go to tanyajoya.com. That's TanyaGioia.com and apply today. Let's get you dreaming about your new purpose.